So Luther decides to launch an attack on the power of indulgences. Now, it's important to see that Tetzel was going a little far. The doctrine of indulgences had not been fully systematized and developed at this point in Catholic theology. So there's a variety of opinions. And the reputable authorities never claimed that indulgences could forgive sins or buy grace. All they did is that they canceled punishment and purgatory. It was called remission of punishment, not remission of guilt, right? Only the sacrament of penance remits guilt when the priest absolves you. But after your guilt and sin is absolved, you also have these satisfactions to do, these works of penance that will be, well, they can extend into punishment in purgatory. What purgatory is an extension of this satisfaction you're supposed to make. Your sins are forgiven, that's why you're in purgatory, right? If your sins weren't forgiven, you'd be in hell. Your sins are forgiven, your guilt is forgiven, but you've still got some punishment to sort of purify you and make you better. And the indulgences are supposed to get you out of that. Kind of self-contradictory, actually. If the punishment in purgatory is supposed to make you a better person, then why would you want to be released from it? In fact, the deeper Catholic notions of purgatory do not think of purgatory as a place of sort of second-rate hell or something. It's actually a place of purification, a place of love and hope. If you read Dante, for instance, in the Divine Comedy, or Catherine of Genoa, who has a treatise on purgatory, purgatory is a place of love. The people who are in purgatory are living in hope. There are no demons in purgatory, right? There's no hellish tortures. There's this purification out of love, and the people in purgatory don't want to leave purgatory until they're purified. People's prayers help, but you don't sort of pay to get out. That's the only coherent notion of purgatory. But in the late Middle Ages, Dante's notion of purgatory, this humane and deeply spiritual notion of purgatory, is not the main notion of purgatory. Purgatory is a place of hellish torture. There's demons with pitchforks ripping the skin off your back, right? And again, in modern Catholic teaching, like in Dante, there's no demons in purgatory, right? Purgatory is actually, Dante insists, is part of heaven, right? Everyone in purgatory is forgiven. Everyone in purgatory is in a state of grace. Everyone in purgatory loves God. There's no demons there. But in the late Middle Ages, that's not how most people thought about purgatory. They pictured purgatory as kind of junior hell. There's demons there. The only thing different between purgatory and hell really is that purgatory is not permanent. And so you really want to get out of there as soon as possible. If you can pay to get out, great. Let's do it. Well, Luther, looking at this, says, well, actually, one of the interesting things is he thinks that real purgatory is not demons and all that sort of stuff. Real purgatory is fear and terror. Real hell is fear and terror. The only difference is that purgatory is not permanent. Luther's notion of hell is this notion of terror where all things accuse you and accuse you in the voice of God. That's real purgatory. Luther thinks he's experienced purgatory on earth. So he thinks that that's what's going to help you. You don't want to actually escape from it. You want to keep on being terrified so that you sort of get thoroughly purged of your sin. Indulgences is a way of paying to escape from the hard work of penance, and therefore it will corrupt ordinary people by making them think that they can buy grace, buy forgiveness of sins, get out of the serious work of penance by paying for it instead. So Luther strikes at the very heart of the theology of indulgences. He argues that the church has no power to remit the penalties of purgatory. And it's in that context that he also has to, for the first time, deal with the sacrament of penance, as we mentioned last time. Now, how is it that this discussion about purgatory ends up, rather, indulgences, indulgences and penance, how does that end up becoming the Reformation? Well, it turns out a few months later, in 1518, Luther is writing an explanation of the 95 Theses. Right? The 95 Theses are about 7 pages long. The explanations are about a 180-page book. Right? So he's writing a whole book defending them. And that's where he starts introducing the notion of the gospel. For instance, he says, okay, you're justified when you're terrified by God, but there's also this word of absolution, and that comforts you. And so you're supposed to believe that you're forgiven because the word of absolution says so. You're not justified by the word, you're justified by the terror, but the word comforts you. That's in the explanation of the 7th thesis. A little bit later, the explanation of the 38th thesis, we get his mature view. We're justified not by being terrified, we're justified by a comforting word, by the gospel. And in fact, in thesis 62, in the explanation of that thesis, written in 1518, we get an explicit contrast between law and gospel, and we have the mature Luther. Interestingly enough, it's that book which gets things rolling.